happened in that time. Thank you for your ongoing support. Thank you for your prayer support. Thank you to individuals here like Jeff, who helps a lot with computer stuff, and everything is appreciated. And I just want to say thank you to start with. I know there's a few new people in the crowd, so to start with, I don't have a clicker this morning, so gotta have help with the advancing the slide thing. Okay, next one. There we go. For those of you who aren't familiar with Papua New Guinea, it's an island nation located north of Australia. There's Australia right there. You know what? I'm going to take this down, if I can. There we go. That'll be easier. So there's about 90 miles between the northern tip of Queensland and the shore of Papua New Guinea here. It's located on the island of New Guinea, which is the second largest island in the world. And as I said before, it's an island nation, so it has all kinds of islands, like in a big circle, about 600 islands in all. Population is more than 7 million now. When I first went, it was 4 million, and you can really see the difference in the country. Within Leh, where I work, there is a huge number of people now. It just doesn't feel the same somehow. The history of New Guinea, it was an Australian territory until it got its independence in 1975. Before that, originally it was German in the north, New Guinea, and British in the south, up until World War I. And the Germans handed it over to Britain, and then eventually they handed it all over to Australia to administer. The church itself has existed in New Guinea since the early 70s, when Joe and Rosa Bell Cannon went in. Next one. There we go. I work in Leh, which is the second largest city in the country. Actually, it's the second city, and there's only two cities. So, within Leh, we have about 13 congregations. So within the city and within driving distance of the city, we have regular quarterly combined services with an average of about 800 people in each service. So sometimes there's 700, sometimes there's 900. So there's a fair number of Christians in Leh. Within the country itself, there's about 150 congregations. And I say 150 just because it's really hard to get the right number. Communication between them is extremely difficult. But they're spread out over 16 provinces, and recently we ended up with a new congregation in an area where we hadn't had a congregation before. So it's spreading. It's spreading slowly, but it is spreading. Okay, next slide, please. Leh is an industrial port. Actually, I should stop here and say, if you have questions, let me know. Or if something I say isn't clear, please let me know, because sometimes when I get nervous, I slur. And I am a little nervous this morning. You know what? When I was at Bramley 3 weeks ago, Bramley has half white, half other nationalities, and I was terrified that I was going to switch into pidgin. In fact, I told them, if I switch into pidgin, it's because you look like Papua New Guineans. Stop me. So it has happened before. Okay, Leh is an industrial port. It's the hub of industry in New Guinea, although Moresby has some industry in some of the other towns as well. It's got a fairly large port, as you can see. That's actually an old picture. This whole area has been redone, and it's being turned into a humongous shipping port, pretty much because of mining. We have a lot of mining in New Guinea, and there's a huge ports project happening there right now. Apart from that, it's also known for a few other things. If I could have the next slide. You may remember that picture from before. Yes, rain. We have 4.5 meters of rain a year. Yeah. Yeah, it's tropical. We're about 6 degrees off the equator, and it's really, really wet and tropical. So along with the rain, we have lots of potholes and lots of mosquitoes and, of course, lots of malaria. So also, just as a point of interest, the next slide, please. It's the last place that Amelia Earhart took off from in 1937 before she disappeared. And a lot of people don't know that. Leh was the last place she visited before she took off. So that's the memorial to Amelia Earhart. Okay, over the last 3 years, there's been a lot of change within New Guinea and also within my role in New Guinea. 3 years ago when I was here, can I have the next slide? Yeah. 3 years ago when I was here, this is what the road outside of the property looked like. Believe it or not, it got worse than that. They eventually stripped all of that asphalt or whatever it was on it. They stripped it all off, and when we were in worship services on Sunday morning, if a car went by, a cloud of dust would arise and just float through the building. It was horrible. I'd get back from worship, and I'd have to shower because you'd be completely gritty. So it's a great relief now that the road doesn't look like that. Next, it looks like this now. If you've been to Leh, Janet, I think just Janet here, doesn't look like it used to. A lot of the roads in Leh have been changed. The government is actually spending more money on Leh now than I think they've ever spent before, and again, because of the mining. Another change that's taken place in the last 3 years. Next. I've lost my co-workers. The last two families or individuals to leave left in May 2014. The lady on the left is Velma Foreman. She was there for 21 years, and she ran the clinic in Leh. She has since moved back to British Columbia and is working there. And I visited her earlier this summer. The other family, the Reese family, worked in Alitau with Craig and Jerry and also left in May 2014. So it's official. I'm the last dinosaur in the country. And you know what? It was a little daunting to begin with, especially going into work permit renewal and everything and wondering how that was going to work. But I've seen God working in that. And to be honest, it was easier to get the work permit this time. We had no obstacles. Always in the past, it's taken months and months and months, and there's been a lot to go through. This time, I had it back like a month after I sent all the paperwork in. And I really believe that that's God working. In my doubt, he fulfilled it. So, the other thing being alone has done, it's led to closer working relationships with some of the brethren in Leh, and I'm grateful for that. And it's also led to a greater appreciation for our visitors. So, yeah, we love having visitors. Okay, next slide. Probably the greatest change that I've seen in the last 3 years has been in my role. And it's changed a lot. The volume of my work there has probably quadrupled. I'm doing a lot more than I was 3 years ago. I've taken on new works, but I've also seen God bring to fruition things that I wondered if I'd ever see them come about. It hasn't been an easy 3 years, but it has been a good one. And I'm glad that I'm doing what I'm doing now. The first change I want to talk a little bit about is missionary care. You know, in the past, I've worked with some of our teams, pretty much organizing trips, planning, like booking flights for them, doing shopping, sometimes traveling with them, and translating. I should mention we have 860 languages in the country, and we use Pidgin, so anybody coming in either needs to know how to speak Pidgin or needs a translator if they're teaching. So I've played that role before. I've taken on a lot more work with our visitors, though, and I'm enjoying it. Sometimes we have returning teams. The team at the top left corner is a group that comes from Australia every other year. The two brothers at the top, the really tall guys, they are really tall as well. I think they're both 6'5" or something. come back each year, usually with different people, but they spend a couple weeks in the village and really involve the young people that they bring with them. And they're just a fun group to be around. They're from Australia. The brother at the bottom is Sandy Dethridge. He has made multiple trips to Papua New Guinea, and he's working with ACU right now and brings a team just about every year as part of ACU's program. So they arrive, spend a little bit of time in Lae, and then usually 6 weeks in villages. So it's pretty full on for those boys, but they really do learn a lot in the time. Sometimes it's just familiar faces returning. Yeah. So you may recognize some people there. The lady at the top visited here a few years ago, actually in the 90s. Her name is Rose Cobb. The lady at the top right corner is Bessie McGecky. She's from British Columbia, and they worked for several years in a remote village in Papua New Guinea. And of course, at the bottom, I think you'll recognize them. At least you should. They were here last week. So, next. Sorry? Yes, he got very bushy there. Actually, the first time I saw a picture after they came back and he'd shaved his beard, I went, who's that? So a lot of what I do now when we have teams there is just getting the facility ready. As you can see, it's not small and it's very dusty. And then doing day-to-day care with our teams. But the far greater role that I've taken on in the last 3 years has been with the Bible College. So the Melanesian Bible College. Probably about 90% of my work right now is somehow related to MBC. Next. Okay, a little bit about MBC. The school has existed in some form since the mid-1970s. It was Lae Bible College, a Bible school first, and then School of Life. And Art Ford was the principal of School of Life. In 1988, it became Melanesian Bible College. And we serve families. We do get some singles, but not too many. For the most part, we serve families. So as you can see, lots of kids. The programs we offer are 2 to 3 years, and they pretty much enable the students to go back to their home congregations and serve their congregations and community. Just give them a Bible basis to do that with. Just a good understanding of the Bible. All of the courses are currently offered in Tokpisin, which is the Creole language we use. But in 2017, we hope to introduce English courses. And if you're familiar with Sunset, they have satellite schools in different parts of the world. One of them is in Singapore, and two of our students are at school right now. They're finishing up their second year. When they return, we're hoping they'll be working with Jab Mesa, who is the principal of the school. He's standing there. To start introducing those courses in English for Papua New Guinea to use. Eventually, if it gets up and running well, we'll have students from the Pacific also coming. So it has a lot of potential, and I think it can really help the church to grow there too, just by bringing up the level of education. I've taken on several roles with the Melanesian Bible School. The first one was the library, which actually started working on 3 years ago this month. Next. This is what it looked like when we first got there. A sister in Christ, Dogo Tatara, came and asked me if I could help her figure out how to sort out the library. That was no small project. It was a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be. But yes, that's what it looked like when we first got there. Next. A lot of the books were damaged, dirty, buggy. Yes, buggy, very buggy. And a lot had walked off with former students. They didn't have a good policy about following up to get the books back when they lent them out. So there's big gaps. If you have a set of concordances, it can go Matthew, Mark, Romans, Philippi, and on like that. It's just, we're missing quite a few books. But the books that were there, we worked on. Okay, Over the next several months, we worked at cleaning them, reorganizing, and reprocessing them. So as you can see, it was a lot of work. I used to do a couple hours in the library and go home and take a shower because I'd be incredibly gritty, just like, ooh. It's nothing like cockroaches to just make your skin crawl. This is what the library looks like now. So that represents a lot of work, and it still is a lot of work. We're nowhere near done with it. Next. We have over 2,000 books available right now to the students, as well as, I'm guessing, probably 25 more boxes of unprocessed books. One of our former missionaries died a couple of years ago and had his son ship his library to us. I'm going to start working on that when I go back. When Rose Cobb came last year, she also donated a pile of books. Plus, we've bought books over the last 3 years. There's a lot of work waiting for me. Next. So far, I've repaired more than 500 books, and I'm about halfway through with the card cataloging. And I'm doing the card cataloging with no particular system. It's turning out to be a giant project, but... The students are given monitored time to work in the library each week, and Dogo and I oversee that, so we're not losing books now. Next. Another thing that I've taken on is literacy. In February 2014, I started teaching literacy classes. Next slide. As I mentioned before, families come to school, and a lot of times the wives in particular come with no education. Or very little education. The husbands quite often arrive with enough to get by with. Some of them, we had one this year that really struggled and should have been in literacy classes, but wasn't. Just to tell you a little bit about these two, this was my first literacy class. The lady, this side of the table, her husband was a teacher and headmaster for 29 years before he retired. And they came to the Bible college, she came totally illiterate. So, isn't that sad? I mean, several of you in here have been teachers or are teachers. How would you feel if your wife couldn't read? It's shocking to us, but it's so normal over there. And just a little bit more, the little boy is a little hard to see. He was about 9 years old when he came to us. He was the younger brother of a student, and was brought along as the babysitter, and he had never been to school. And he wasn't able to finish the school year because his brother-in-law got ill and eventually died. But he finished the first half, and I've worried about him for 3 years and heard just before I left that they had put him in school. So it's a good feeling to know that at least we gave him the start. If he hadn't had that start, he would have gone back to the village and he would never have gone to school. So, just a little bit about the program we use. We use a lot of visual aids, and the literacy class is taught phonetically. So, if that doesn't make sense, it's pidgin. It's a little hard to see that, but all of those flashcards represent something with the first letter of the word. And it's all done in pidgin. A lot of people have asked me, why don't you teach them English? If you can't understand English, how are you going to learn to read and write in it? So it's pidgin. Next, we also play a lot of games. It's amazing the things that, as children, we learn here, just even by watching television, that they have no opportunity to learn. So when we start teaching them, quite often we have to go back to the basics and start teaching patterning, matching, things like that. So that we have lots of fun. We never stop laughing either. Okay. At the end of the school year, they have completed 10 weeks of basic lessons and another 5 of practical lessons. Like I give them spelling tests. I give them multiple choice tests. I give them assignments where they have to look at a word and then write it from memory. Just in order to help them, because the following year they will be in our Bible classes. So to get them ready, that's what we do. After they finish the literacy program, they're awarded certificates. And I just want to point out, this was my 2015 class. The girl on the end was from the settlement behind us, and she has continued to read. I see her each week at worship. The two ladies in the middle have just finished their basic year in Bible classes. And the teachers were all like, I can't believe how well they're doing. And I don't want to take the credit for that. It's God that's doing it. I was really, really encouraged to be able to teach them this year and to see the excitement in them. First, when I gave them a Bible, they'd never had a Bible before, and they each had their own Bible, and the joy. We take things for granted here. And then to see them learning in class and really getting into it, it just was such an encouragement. Okay, next, that one. As a side note, a few years ago, one of our graduates returned to her village and took the curriculum with her and has been teaching in her village. She is from the Warrior Valley and over the years has taught probably hundreds of people to read. And some of them have ended up becoming Christians, and some of those have ended up in their Bible college there, just because of this work. I visited there in 2013, and that year alone, she had 36 graduates. I can't imagine. I found teaching two or three students exhausting. She had 36 that year. I was greatly surprised last year when she arrived from the village with the materials fully translated into her local language. The name of the language is Guhu Samani, and over the next couple of months, we were able to do the cards for her and all of the materials that she'd need to teach it. So what you're seeing there is a translated copy of the pidgin with words that, I don't remember any of the names, that they're all based on Guhu Semini. But I was just encouraged that she has taken this so seriously and is spreading the word through something so simple. And a lot of times that's what being a missionary is, just providing things that help people with basic knowledge so that they can learn the Bible and grow. Next. Okay. In 2014, one of our teachers died. She was a longtime teacher with the Bible College. Her name was Nabobo. Okay, next. There she is. She was teaching a ladies' class that year. Because we were short a teacher, I ended up taking on ladies' classes myself. So that's been a challenge in itself. Next slide, please. Again, there's my lit students from last year in a class this year. So the ladies are usually separated into separate classes from the men. Some of them will, if they have enough education, they can join the men's class as well. But a lot of times we have ladies that end up by themselves because of their educational level. So those two were in class, and there's four of us that teach. So that was my turn to teach. In 2015, I took the Old Testament survey class, and this year I did God's Plan to Redeem Man. Both of them were a lot of work to prepare, but I learned so much, and I'm just so glad that I can be doing that. Next. Okay, a role that I didn't expect to take on is printing. Over the years, probably since the 80s, the church in New Guinea has had their own talk pigeon songbook. The original looked a little different than this. It had a bigger picture on the front. It's songs that, for the most part, were translated in the 80s, and a lot of them you'll recognize. If we started singing them, you'd recognize the tune. They're translated from English, and there are some English songs in the back. However, we went for about 7 years without this book being available. Up until then, brothers within the church had taken it upon themselves to print it, and suddenly nobody was doing it. Even though they said they were going to do it, it wasn't happening. So we went for a long period of time without the songbook being available. Eventually, Jab and I put in an order for 1,000 of these. And 10 months later, the printing company was still lying to me, saying, well, yeah, they're on the printing press now, yeah. It's so frustrating sometimes. It's a different society. 10 months later, we managed to get the money back, and we went and bought the printer. It's just a standard photocopier, but it has done a lot of work, and it really has started serving the church there. So, you'll see. So this is what we started with. I do the photocopying, usually sets of 250 songbooks at a time, 40 pages. So it takes quite a bit of time and a lot of photocopier fumes to get ready to bind. Then we have groups of people from the church or even students get together and do the collation. So that's what you're seeing there. I should point out, this is all volunteer work. Nobody gets paid for this. It's completely not for profit. The price that we print them for is what we sell them for. And the point is, we want to be able to make them available to the church and also sustain printing. So the money that comes back in goes back into buying supplies and printing the next lot. So, as I said, we do volunteer work. We get together, we laugh, we sweat. You always sweat in New Guinea. And we get those all collated. The next step, we have that gigantic print cutter there. I can't lift that. To give you an idea of how heavy it is, I'm physically unable to lift it. It takes two men to move that printer cutter. And it's quite comical at times. I've used it. We cut three songbooks at a time on it. And this brother made it look so easy. He just put it in. He'd go, and it would be cut. But when I do it, I go, and my leg comes up. I can't really see it. It's a whole body effort. Cut 250 songbooks, and you're exhausted at the end of it. So, yeah, it's an adventure. After we get them cut, we bind them, which includes stapling. Sorry, that was a picture taken at night. It shows a brother using a stapler and doing the stapling. That's always an adventure in itself. And then the last step is binding them. So as you can see, it's time consuming. If I really get it all together well, it can take up to 2 weeks to do. If I'm not well organized or if we don't get it collated quickly, it can take longer than that. So far, we have printed 1,750 songbooks. So, yeah, it's been a lot of work. But aside from the songbooks, we've started printing other things. The church in Alatau is English, for the most part. There's a few people there that speak Pidgin, but for the most part, they're English speaking. They also put a songbook together a few years ago and had it printed and ran into problems getting it printed again. So we took that on. So that was another project that is just a reprint of their songbook, and we've made it available to them also at base cost. So there's no profit. Nobody gains out of this other than the fact that the materials are available. I'm sure some of you will be familiar with this book. It's Jerry Tolman's His Eternal Plan. Jerry is a preacher in Michigan, and this is a really good book. It just walks you through God's plan, pretty much. And if you're studying with somebody, it's a good book to use. I finished translating it in 2013, and there's the end result. When I get back to Leh, we plan to start printing this once again to make available to the church. So things like that. It's been a lot of work, but it's very rewarding. If you go to a bookshop in Leh, you can't find materials like that. We have a bookshop at 6 Mile and another in Leh that are run by the Evangelical Brethren Mission. I think that's it. And it's pretty much their doctrine. You can't get standard materials that aren't colored by the doctrine of who's printing them. So to be able to do this is helping the church a lot. We've also got permission to translate this one. So that's another thing I'll be starting once I get back to lay. I've used this in our ladies' classes in lay. When I had the English ladies' class, we used it, and it is a very, very good book. That is a really good book for personal growth. So, okay, next. Oh yeah, there's a picture of Jab with the songbook. We had a party when we finished 1,000 songbooks, and that was the first songbook printed, so we awarded it to Jab, and he was over the moon. Yeah, he was enjoying it. Okay, next slide. I want to tell you a little bit, too. A minor role that I have is in providing Bibles. We have a congregation in Melbourne, Australia, that has provided financial support for several things. One of the projects we've taken on is purchasing Bibles and making them available to the church. And that may sound kind of weird, but if you go to a bookstore in Lae, that is the New Testament in Pidgin. It's New Testament and the Book of Psalms. Janet, help. Psalms, thank you. I switched back into Pidgin there for a minute. It happens. Anyway, if you go to a bookstore in Lae, that would cost about $7 for that book. We purchased them, I'm trying to remember, we purchased them for about $4.50 from the Bible Society, and we sell them for $2.50. So $7 to $2.50. That's, yeah. This one, I think we purchased these for about 23 kina, which would be about $12. And in the stores there, they sell them for 70 kina, which is about $35. We're able to sell them for 20 kina, so $10. So you may think, how are you doing that? The instructions the congregation gave us were, use the money to buy Bibles and then mark the price down as far as you can. So at least the Christians are still having to pay for them, which means that they own them, but at much reduced prices, and it's the opposite of profit. We're losing money. But they've promised to keep sending money as we need it, and in this, we're able to provide Bibles to people that just don't have the money to go and pay. I mean, this is pretty standard, but that's 70 kina. Some of them, if you get one with the zipper and everything, it can be well over 100 kina. The zipper Bibles we sell for $20. So it's helping the church all the way around, and it's also showing them that not everything is for profit, because unfortunately in Papua New Guinea, a lot of people see opportunities and take them. So it's a way that we can show them another picture. Another minor role that I have in New Guinea is with the Head Start program at MBC. I don't have much of a role with this. I'd like to take on more of a role, but I can't fit it in. So next, there we go. There's our kids. That was the student body for this year. And there were a couple of smaller kids as well that weren't old enough to go to school and were with their moms. But for the most part, each year we have a group like this. They are little rascals. They were out of control, I can tell you. They were hilarious. Again, we have a project that one of the congregations in Brisbane decided several years ago that they wanted their Sunday school class, their little kids, to get involved in mission work. So those kids take up a collection each Sunday, and once a year, their collection is sent to MBC to run the Head Start program. So, isn't that fun? I like that idea. It's teaching our kids right from when they're little that they can help others. And the fact that they're helping little kids in New Guinea is so much more encouraging. Yeah, Dogo teaches that each morning. And with the money that they receive from Head Start, she's able to buy materials, which, I mean, everything's money. In New Guinea, everything's expensive too. So she's able to provide basic materials to them because they're not in school. When they come to MBC, they're not in school. So they start learning their shapes and colors and alphabet and everything, and do lots of activities. Next. My role in this is just to assist with caring for the money and communicating with the congregation in Brisbane, but also in special projects. That was getting the kids ready for graduation, because they take part too when we have our graduation each year. And also preparing the class party, which is the next slide. His name is Alfred. He is a character. His dad is the preacher at one of the congregations in Lay, and they come around still, and he's interesting. But you can tell they enjoyed it. So, next. Okay, and moving on. My last role that I've taken on with MBC has been fundraising. And if you get my newsletter, if you read it, you may be aware that we've started raising funds to build a new classroom for MBC. Okay. What you're seeing is a picture of one of the existing buildings. That is actually the offices and third year classroom. And in April 2015, we started selling drinks. We started selling Coke and Pepsi and Mountain Dew and whatever else, just to start bringing money in towards the project of building a new classroom. The reason for that is the buildings were built in 1979, so they're 37 years old. That's nothing in Canadian standards. In Papua New Guinea standards, they're getting pretty decrepit. Think back to the 4.5 meters of rain a year. With that rain, we have humongous humidity. This summer, when it finally did start raining again, everybody was like, oh, it's so humid. No, it wasn't. I judge humidity by whether I sweat or not, and I didn't break a sweat at all this summer. The humidity level in Lay is incredible. I have to wash the shower out every 2 weeks because the mold just grows thick. And it's if you wear something outside in the rain and then don't come and dry it out properly, within a day it can be moldy. My roommate back in Lay last week, I saw pictures on Facebook, they were washing the inside of the house. It's something we have to do every year because mold just takes over. It'll go up the walls So between the rain and the mold and the high humidity, everything's in disrepair. But the major problem we have right now is the next slide. That's termite damage. Yeah. We have a lot of termites in Lay. In fact, they're in the process now of replacing the hospital in Lay because literally the termites brought the buildings down. The wards at the hospital were joined by a covered walkway, and it got to the point where you'd be walking down the walkway and you'd have to jump over a hole, and then you walk a little further and jump over a hole. You could never walk in a straight line. You'd be zigzagging to get around the termite damage. Same thing's happening to the school. So that's showing some of the damage in one of the classrooms. That's not all the damage there is. Each classroom has quite a bit of damage, and the desks are also falling apart, and I'm kind of scared that one of these days the students are going to sit down and go crash because the termites are into everything. There's another one. Yeah, so more termite damage. Just before I left, I noticed that the veranda outside, there's a walkway along the front of each classroom with steps down. I happened to look down, and the termites have even eaten the bear that goes under the walkway. One of these days, somebody's going to go through the floor there. That's the extent of damage that we have. So it's got to the point where we have to start working on this now or really regret it in not too many years from now. So over the last year, we've taken on a number of projects. Selling drinks was one of them. During the lectureship last year, we set up a little store of sorts in the library. That's Dogo manning the shop. We made Bibles and songbooks available then, but we also sold drinks and snacks on the side. Thank you. I'm almost done. And it was just, we managed between that and the next slide. That was a stall we set up at the fair. They don't call it the Morobe Fair, they call it the Morobe Show, and that happens each year. We had a stall there last year, and between those two events, we were able to raise more than 10,000 kina, so $5,000. That sounds good, but we need $190,000 in order to build. We have brothers in the church who are contractors and builders who are willing to do the work, but to buy the materials in New Guinea, it's very expensive. So that's the cost we need for the materials. So a lot of my work now revolves around coming up with ways that we can get that money in. And I'm not telling you to put pressure on anybody. I'm just telling you that we do need help. We have gone to the church in New Guinea first. We've sent a request to every congregation we could reach saying, if you can help us, but if you can or can't help us financially, please pray. I'm going to make the same request to you. If you're not able to help financially, that's okay. But if you would pray for us, that would be really good, because it's a huge thing to take on us. $190,000 is not a small amount of money. And in Papua New Guinea context, it's huge. So if anybody's interested in that, I do have some more information available here. Just see me afterwards. Okay. I hope you've enjoyed my rather disjointed presentation here. If you have any questions or comments or arguments or anything, you're welcome. But I just want to say thank you again for your support, for both financial support and prayer support. And thank you for being here this morning, too. Around Leh, we have gold mining. Around Madang, there's nickel mining. In the highlands, there is oil and natural gas. I'm trying to remember. I think there's also gold mining up there, too. There's two fairly significant LNG projects happening in Papua New Guinea right now as well. So.
Thank you, Ruth, for your thoughtful and informative presentation. It certainly helps us to have a vision of Papua New Guinea and the work there and the work that you're doing. It sounds like you're a busy person. And